The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7 Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this March 24th, 2026. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is the Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on a very nice Tuesday afternoon here in the Auburn Opelika area. Yesterday was a lot of fun. We expect today to be a lot of the same. Happy Tuesday, Christian. We got a jam-packed show. Several guests will be on the show today. And seems like the spring is officially here, and summer will probably start next week, if I had to guess.
There may be like winter for a day or two, just because, you know, for no reason other than, but we may have already gotten that. I don't know if that was what the groundhog thing is for, but we'll say that that's
I've never been able to I've never
either.
Looked into it,
but no, by your game on Friday for Auburn High School, it'll be 104. You'll be wishing you could wear that quarter zip today.
Yeah.
And we'll go back to talking about 2 weeks ago. But no, it is going to be a really, really fun show. It always is on Tuesdays as we get to have a big baseball conversation. But today, a little bit more than others. And today is a show that makes my heart, the baseball little kid in me, very, very happy. As we have a man in here who we had to reintroduce to the microphone, reintroduce to the ESPN studio.
But he did send him the address.
There, yeah. Yes. Yeah. We did see the Jeep, though, and that was how we know that he was able to find his way back here. There are no – I don't see the rubber ducky. Oh, no, there he is.
There's two.
He is still in the very front, so how dare I question that. We got our guy, Lindsey Crosby, of Locked On Everything, it feels like, anything baseball, but Braves today, the Locked On Braves postcast. You feel like you do, oh my gosh, I mean, the accolades keep on keeping on, and you're getting ready now to get it started as tomorrow Netflix gets it started with opening day in the MLB.
Welcome back, sir.
You know, I'm glad to be here. What I've always said is it doesn't feel like opening day until you get the Usos on a Netflix broadcast to talk about baseball. That is what I was looking for. I don't just want the crack of the bat. I want the yeet to go along with it. So I'm glad that Netflix has given the people what they want.
That's and to make it even better day. For Braves fans, we get to watch Max Fried do it with the Yankees. I mean, yeah. What better way to do it? What
did you say watch the Braves? I heard we're actually going to be able to somewhat do that this season is what I'm hearing and reading on the interwebs.
They've been putting out announcements for Braves Vision, which is their own team-owned, team-produced broadcasts. The promo video, right, the reel that runs at the beginning of the game broadcast harkens back to the days of TBS. It has snippets of the music from TBS in the
which
late 80s
very
and 90s.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, super. They knew what they were doing here. They've announced you can stream it in market, both monthly and annual options.
What?
And they announced this morning a deal that they had reached with Spectrum already to carry the channel. More announcements are coming in the next 24 to 48 hours.
I'm one of like four that applauded that.
Yeah, like Xfinity is coming. DirecTV already has a channel listing in the guide for it. So like multiple other announcements are coming. so that you can watch things directly with, you know, with the Braves,
yeah,
versus having to pay an RSN to do it.
Wow, there's so much to go over today. And again, our guy Lindsey Crosby in the studio at Braves Today also covers Auburn baseball as well, which we will get to as we normally do on Tuesday afternoons. We'll recap the Texas series, preview South Alabama tonight and Alabama this weekend. Plus, coming up in hour number two, I have two different coaches joining us from Auburn University, one from Auburn baseball. We've got Coach Nonnemaker will be with us in the second hour. Also, Jessica Braswell from Auburn Equestrian, as they are hosting the SEC Championships this weekend. So both of those interviews coming up in hour number two. But phone lines are open in this first hour. If you want to talk baseball with us, and more importantly with Lindsey, you can absolutely do so. Comments or questions, you can give us a call. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. It can be about the Braves. It can be about the major leagues as a whole. We're going to talk a little bit of World Baseball Classic and just reminisce on how awesome that was. Also talking Auburn as well, you can give us a call. Or you can get us with some quick hitters in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. And I don't know if I'm the only one that feels this way, and it shouldn't be this way if you just look at the calendar, but the start of Major League Baseball was just like here. It's just like, ta-da, here's the season, opening day. Like, I don't know if I'm just not excited. I don't know. I don't know why that is, but
it's not you, excluding special one-offs like the Korea series and stuff. This is the earliest MLB has ever had opening day.
Yeah.
And I think when you have the World Baseball Classic in the middle of spring training,
I think that did it too.
It takes a little bit of the focus away, and I think you kind of lose track of how much time has elapsed in spring training. And honestly, after the World Baseball Classic, I really struggled to get back into watching spring training games because you go from these, you know, national teams with all of this amazing talent and the stakes and everything, and you go into a spring training game where the road lineup is already guys you haven't heard of. And then by the end of the sixth, it's a lot of other guys you've never heard of on both sides. And I struggled to kind of get back into spring training games because of that. So it's not just you. It's both the schedule and just the vibes are off because the WBC was so fantastic and the spring training games don't matter.
I think college baseball has helped a little bit with that as well.
Oh, yeah. I think so.
We haven't broke down the Braves pitching rotation and the 2.5 guys that they have in their entire bullpen that they can use whenever they want. Auburn baseball, college baseball has driven a lot of that as well. Almost like last year how March Madness had such a big conversation for us. It was all of a sudden like, holy cow, it's July, we have media days, and it's almost college football season.
And weirdly enough, too, Lindsey, do you think that with ESPN not having the big Sunday night baseball rights and the fact that opening day's on Netflix and things, the fact that it's so spread out now with the coverage of baseball, I feel like maybe that has something to do with it, too?
There's absolutely been moments where there's big stories going on in the sports world, and I've turned on ESPN, and they're talking about something else because they're talking about, you know, leagues that they have the rights to or focusing on other stories.
You can say the NBA. It's okay.
Yeah, you know, and so, yeah, it's a lot of LeBron James talk that comes out of Stephen A. Smith.
The W.
Things like that. And so it's, I think some of it's just the way that we're consuming it. But it is, it has been fragmented this spring. And the way the league's offseason kind of drug on a little bit, I think, has been a big deal as well. So,
and the biggest thing, the biggest question that everybody wants to know is, we talk about spring training and opening day for 2026. Is there even going to be a 2027?
So I have a contrarian take to a lot of people.
Dun, dun, dun.
The expectation, and like it is a virtual certainty, there will be a lockout after this season. This beginning of December, when the league year ends, the owners are going to lock out the players so that they can negotiate a new CBA. Just to clarify, a strike is player-driven. A lockout is ownership-driven. So it's not the players doing this. You don't have to do this. You can play under the old CBA. You can just keep things open and negotiate. But I am convinced that you're not actually going to miss games in 2027 because you just had a fantastic postseason that set records. You just had a WBC that set records. You're poised to have a really good season. And after 2028, all of the league's national TV deals are up for renewal. It's time for them to negotiate all of that stuff. And if they miss games in 2027, even if they just push the start of the season back,
it's going to damage them in the negotiations. And Rob Manfred has talked about like the last things he wants to do before he leaves. He wants to figure out the stadium situations, get a new stadium open in Tampa Bay, get a new stadium open in Las Vegas, and he wants to get that negotiation done before he retires. And if they miss games, it's just going to be that much harder for them to get the money that they are looking for. Because, and we might get into the whole salary cap and floor and all that stuff later, but one of the things they have to do is find a more equitable financial system. And if they want to replicate the NBA and NFL and all of that, you have to have the largest pool of revenue for each team coming from the national media rights. It's a big deal for their future. And so they're going to find a way to not miss games. The league may have to cave on some stuff, but they're not going to miss games. And that's my belief, because it would cost them too much in the long run if they do.
And for those, the CBA is the collecting bargaining agreements. Yes. That is basically the middleman contract with the MLB and the players union or the players association, yeah. Right? That basically comes up with the employment, the structures of the just about everything.
The roster sizes, yeah. The rules.
Where one
for the minor
side doesn't get screwed from the other.
Correct. I
mean, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And everything that baseball does revolves around that CBA. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, and again, you can play under the existing CBA. Like, you don't have to wait to play until you make a new one, but if you have a lockout or a strike or whatever, then by definition, like, you can't access the facility, you're not accessing the facility, and you can't play. But yeah, they have to work on all those rules. Owners are supposedly interested in a salary cap and have set a hard line on a salary cap. They've been doing that for 40 years. They haven't gotten one yet, and I honestly don't think it's going to solve the problem that everybody thinks it's going to solve by putting a salary cap in. So I still don't see it happening. I think they'll replicate some of the effects of a cap and a floor, a salary cap to limit high spending and a floor to require spending at the bottom, but I don't think they're going to have a formal cap and floor because MLB doesn't have one, and that's been the number one thing the players have refused to agree to.
Well, good thing is that's next year, and we don't have to worry about that in 2026.
Exactly.
Things that fans are worried about, it seems like, are the Atlanta Braves because of whatever the pitching rotation is going to be, whether they are going to compete since money is clearly an issue on spending in any ways. And we've got several people texting us, asking questions. Again, you can do so as well. 334-784-1067 is the text box number. We got our guy Lindsey Crosby, our baseball guru in studio for all of hour number one. Or you can give us a call, 334-321-1390. And first question is Braves starting five to begin the year. Says
five?
It's what it's yeah.
Rotation.
Yeah, rotation. Rotation is this thing where you have a set number of pitchers that you rely on any given week,
gotcha.
Christian.
The good news is the Braves have two rotations. One's the IL rotation.
Yes.
One's the actual rotation.
Yeah, Schwellenbach, Waldrip, and now Strider starting on it as well. Joey Wentz.
Yeah, that's
and
what this
AJ Smith-Shawver from last year. Yeah, so I went and checked. As of last night, no team in baseball either will have as many starting pitchers on their injured list to start the season or lost as many in season or in spring as the Braves did. The Braves will have five pitchers on the IL, and they lost four of them in the year. The next closest is the Blue Jays. They'll have four on the IL. They lost three in the spring, but two of those three are supposed to be short-term absences, right? The Braves are one short-term absence, two maybe mid-year, and one late in the year because he had Tommy John, and one's out for the whole year.
Which is why this person also says, as a Braves fan, it feels like a replay of last year.
It's really the third consecutive year that injuries have decimated the Braves. It's just in 24, it was position players. And then 25 was pitching, and now this. To briefly recap, 24, the Braves were the first team in MLB history to make the postseason with three opening day starters missing the last 35-plus games of the season. And that undersells it, because when everybody got hurt, it was all kind of like sequential. The opening day lineup got six innings together all year, 24.
I remember you reading that out, and it was the Braves set the record for the most amount of randomized rosters that had to be filled out by Snit every year.
And then last year, all five opening day starters on the 60-day IL at the same time. That's also never happened in MLB history. And Spencer Strider missed a month with a hamstring issue. So they lost their top six starters last year. This year, you're already down four guys in spring. So you have a five-man rotation on the injured list and an actual five-man rotation. Chris Sale's your opening day starter. Ronaldo Lopez will be in game two. Grant Holmes will be in game three. Going into spring, they were your fourth and fifth starters. Mm-hmm. And they're now two and three. Bryce Elder was supposed to be in your bullpen as a long man. He's now your number four starter. And Jose Suarez is a guy that they put on waivers in December and then got him back in January. And as of now, he's probably your number five starter with flame-throwing prospect Didier Fuentes working as a long man out of the pen for a couple weeks and then going to Gwinnett to keep stretching out. He's running that 2022 Spencer Strider thing.
Yeah.
Where he's got a fastball, a slider, not much else. You're going to throw him in the bullpen, and if he does as well as he could, you can move him to the rotation later. But if not, they'll send him down to AAA.
Doing that with the Bryce Elder rotation almost, like you were saying, going to Gwinnett and can be called up. I mean, good thing is there's a guy that you used to play for the Braves that allowed you to get stronger a lot faster. And Jurickson Profar might have something that the pitchers can use to make sure they can get back.
Is snake bit the right term here? Like, is that where we're at with the Braves? Because 1 year, okay, that's baseball. 2 years. All right, that's
and different
bad
sides
luck
of the ball in the second year.
Yeah, but here we are, and it seems like all hope is lost for the Braves, and opening day is not even here yet.
My hot take is provided they don't have any more significant rotation injuries, which is not a given, clearly.
You can't get much worse.
But yeah, well, you say that. But I think this can still be a 90-win baseball team.
Whoa.
I think this team can still go 90 and 72. Now, a lot of stuff has to break right. I'm not saying they will, but I think that they could because the offense looks so much better than last year. They've got more depth, and they have a lot of guys expected to come back. But at this point, it does feel like that this is worse than just bad luck. But here's the thing. Like, so much of this has been weird stuff. Spencer Strider is an oblique strain, but it's not his throwing side. It's the other side. Joey Wentz tore his ACL trying to cover first base on the road because the Rays bunted like four times in the same game. It's spring training. What are you doing?
Small ball, baby.
Yeah. It was the guy's second bunt single of the day that he got hurt on. Anyway.
Baseball, baby.
Yeah. Hurston Waldrop and Spencer Schwalenbach were bone spurs in the elbow. Like, almost every pitcher has bone spurs. It's just, at what point does it bother you, and how bad is it?
Sure.
And Schwalenbach's came up the Friday before they reported, pitchers and catchers reported. Waldrop's came up at camp. Like, 2 weeks before spring training, they were fully healthy in the rotation.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost four guys in season, or in spring. It's just, it's immensely bad luck, but it feels like it's an issue with the training staff or something, and people want the training staff to be fired or replaced, and I don't know if that's going to do anything.
Yeah.
I think it's just a really bad string of luck combined with some guys that maybe aren't as healthy as we thought. I thought Schwalenbach was the safest bet in the rotation as far as health goes. Like, it was a fluke issue with his elbow last year. He broke the end of his elbow off. It's a common pitcher injury.
Gross.
Right? He was healthy all offseason, and then a bone spur started giving him problems right at P's and C's reporting.
Yeah. We need to take a break, but do have another question about the Braves in terms of the streaming stuff, and you may have clarified this and I missed it, but someone asking if for the Braves, if any streaming partners are going to do Braves Vision, or is it going to be through the MLB app, Braves TV only? Like, how, again, exactly is that going to work?
Yeah, just real quick, it will be on a lot of the cable and streaming providers. We don't know exactly who yet, but they are supposed to announce that in the next day or two. It could be as late as Friday before we get all of the announcements. The Guardians last year made their final announcement a couple hours before first pitch, when they switched over. So,
jeez.
But the Braves, I've been told by people who work with some of these broadcasters, have been negotiating. They've not been setting very strict or high financial like requests on this. It's been a rather affordable RSN because their goal is at the biggest reach as possible. So we don't have confirmation, but it should be on all of the usual suspects by Friday.
Cool. There you go. Talking Braves, talking Major League Baseball as well. We got our guy Lindsey Crosby in the studio. We'll zoom out a little bit and talk about some of the other teams across Major League Baseball, including the World Series, not favorites, but my predicted World Series champs, the Boston Red Sox. We'll talk about that group of guys. I'm kidding. We will talk about them, though. And all the other teams around Major League Baseball as we're just underway here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. We got our guy Lindsey Crosby in the studio of Braves Today. Also covers Auburn baseball as well, which we will be talking about in the next two segments, talking about the Auburn Tigers, a top five Auburn Tigers team. But let's zoom out a little bit and talk other teams around Major League Baseball. No surprise that the Dodgers have not just the best World Series odds, they have the best ever World Series odds. Nobody has been a bigger favorite to start the year than the Los Angeles Dodgers.
I don't believe that,
I know,
Jacob.
It's crazy. I know, breaking news here on the show. But other than the Dodgers, who are obviously just stacked and loaded and ridiculous, other teams that you have your eyes on, Lindsey, to start the 2026 MLB campaign?
I've been intrigued by what Seattle has done. Because the Seattle Mariners, and they have some of the best odds out there, the Seattle Mariners have this rotation that they built out of the draft. Like all five of the, or four of these five guys were drafted by them in the last 7 or 8 years. And they made a trade for Luis Castillo a few years ago. But to go along with that, they have Julio Rodriguez. Cal Raleigh hit 60 whatever home runs last year.
How'd he hit in the World Baseball Classic?
Not great. He also would not shake his teammate's hand, which was a whole
thing.
What
a crazy situation that was. I just want to point out,
Ozzie Albies with Team Netherlands played Ronald Acuna Jr. with Team Venezuela, and there's photos from before the game of them hugging. So the Braves guys love each other. The Mariners guys, not so much. Although, the difference is that was during the game. Like, that was...
fair.
That was during the game. But, anyway... they go out and they get Brendan Donovan, who can play a lot of different positions. He can play third, he can play second, he can play outfield. He can even cover at shortstop. And they have who I jokingly call Auburn Tigers legend, Colt Emerson.
One of the many.
One of the him, Kevin McGonigal, both of them, Gunnar Henderson, and third one, all committed to the Auburn Tigers. And really kind of the last prominent high school recruits to not make it to campus and go to the draft instead. But he's ready to debut. You combine that with their ability to just build relievers out of nowhere. They have a very good bullpen. I think that this, if Raleigh doesn't fall back to earth too far, I do like them in what appears to be a little bit weaker version of their division to potentially make a run. So I like them. I'm trying to think about more National League teams. There's been a lot of like Mets and Phillies conversations, and I don't really see it.
Okay.
And I think that some of that's maybe just Braves bias, right? But when you look at the Mets, for instance, it's a lot of talent, right? They got rid of, like, they fixed the clubhouse, okay? You know, the Pete Alonso walked, Edwin Diaz is gone, Brandon Nimmo, Jeff McNeil, all that stuff. But they've got a lot of guys who are playing new positions for the first time. Bo Bichette, who's been a shortstop, not a very good one, but a shortstop, is playing third. Jorge Polanco, who's done a lot of like second base and stuff in his career, is playing first. Marcus Semien, who has had some age-related offensive decline, he's at second. They have prospect Carson Binge debuting on opening day in right. They're counting on Luis Robert to like rebound to the one good year that he's ever had in 2023. He got paid off of it. Like, shout out to him. He got paid off of it. But like, there's a ton of talent here, but there's a ton of questions. And the rotation, there's not a true number one. Freddie Peralta, the trade that they made, valued him like a number one, but he's not a true number one. Mm-hmm. His fielding independent pitching, his expected ERA was like a run and a change higher than his actual ERA last year. Nolan McLean looks like he could be really good. He was on Team USA. Like, it was like your starters for Team USA were like Paul Skeens, Tarek Skubal, Logan Webb, and Nolan McLean. Like, it's like, wait a second. Yeah, like, so maybe he could be an ace, but they're all kind of annoying him too early. And then the bullpen, Devin Williams, was not good from an ERA perspective last year. A lot of the inputs were okay in New York, and he just had a struggle with the Yankees. But, like, people calling them the favorites behind the Dodgers in the National League, I could see where it could happen, but I feel like a lot of stuff has to go right. And it's the Mets. When's the last time a lot of stuff went right for the Mets?
True. What about the team up in, like, the New England area, playing the American League? They've got the fifth best World Series odds.
You know what's funny is I mentioned Boston on a radio hit. Not here, clearly, because you guys know ball and they didn't. But, like, they laughed at me. They were like, why Boston? And I'm like, listen, okay, this outfield is incredibly talented. My hot take is if anybody's going to knock off Aaron Judge for MVP, it could be Roman Anthony.
The Roman Empire.
Yes. But, like, Roman Anthony, Marcelo Meyer at second. Sadon Rafael is one of the best defensive center fielders in baseball. He can also play shortstop. That's useful, right? The rotation, Crochet and Gray, is exciting. Connelly Early, I'm glad he made it. Ranger Suarez was a bad move. Ranger Suarez, a long-term deal to a dude who's barely throwing 90, was a terrible idea.
We don't have to talk about that.
But it's a really good staff top to bottom. And, like, I love the Red Sox.
Me too, Lindsay.
It's just a super hard division. That's the concern for me.
That's okay. As long as they're competitive and win more games than the Braves, then I am good to go. Well, when we come back, we're going to flip from professional baseball, I didn't mean it, to Auburn baseball, a top five team in college baseball. We'll talk about the Tigers next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
All right, we're back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I said we're switching to college baseball. I lied. We will get there momentarily. But, of course, during the break, we thought of four other things that we wanted to talk about on the professional baseball side of things. And Lindsay wants to play a fun game from an article that Christian found about top questions for every Major League Baseball team to start the season. Lindsay claims that he knows all of them and is going to guess them. Now, we're not doing every team, okay?
We don't want to do 30 teams?
Well, we're gonna rapid fire all okay. In two breaths, and we'll...
No. How about we do like three, and then you have a question on ballparks, and then I do want to talk about a top five Auburn baseball.
Yeah. Well, I'll start with the ballpark question.
Yeah. And some of these are probably going to be like my question, and I'm hoping my question and their question overlap.
Sure.
But yeah.
But no, but
the
ballpark question was, we talked about Camden Yards last year, of how far they brought in the left field wall just because they have pushed it out, because they have the plethora of left-handed hitters, and they want to continue to work with their farm system and all of the young left-handed hitters. You're now seeing that with the Royals as well at Kauffman Stadium, and realizing that over the past 4 years, they've missed out on 45 or 50 home runs based off of essentially a triples alley where it's very hard to get the ball into the seats. How much stock is going to continue to be put into farm systems with things like that? Or is it going to be much more of what the Dodgers are doing and going and getting some of those superstars? Obviously, the Royals can't as much compete with that side of things. And so programs like this, how many clubs are going to look at their farm system, realize what works for them, and almost adapt their stadium to their strengths?
I think the smart teams will try to understand, is there any realistic changes we can make to the ballpark that will complement our roster? I don't know how many of them are going to dig deep into the minor league side of it.
Okay.
Just because there's so much uncertainty with prospects. Right, like them making the league, period, is rare already.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think, to the point of Camden Yards, like specifically, they had a lot of handedness hitters that made sense. Kauffman Stadium, I pulled the park factors. The last 3 years, it's been the third worst ballpark for home runs for batters of either handedness.
Wow.
Like, the only ballparks that were worse were Oracle Park for the Giants and PNC Park for the Pirates. And so, like, them making this change, even if they just bring it towards neutral, I think that's really going to help a lot. By contrast, Yankee Stadium has been one of the top. Dodger Stadium has been number one over the last 3 years. Some of that's wind and not dimensions, but still, like, it's Braves are like top 10 in this. I do think you've seen more teams be willing to make changes. Cleveland changed some of the features in the stadium that were blocking the wind, and they were able to kind of, I don't know if it was intentional or not, but kind of make like a wind tunnel effect that goes from home plate and carries out to the outfield. And so they actually saw a boost in power production with roughly the same lineup because rather than the wind coming in and hitting this feature in the stadium and just kind of killing balls that were right there, instead the wind's now carrying the balls and giving them an extra 10 feet per batted ball. So like,
it's like, all right, get the ball into right center field, get it up in the jet stream.
Get it up in the stream and it's gone. Yeah.
Holy cow.
That's ridiculous.
So I think we'll start seeing more things where teams are willing to make relatively minor changes if it could have a big effect to their ballpark or to their run production.
We're moving this pole for no given reason. It just so happens to create a little bit more wind flow out towards left.
We're gonna have it here in the home half of innings, but we're gonna take put it back.
It's
up.
It's a movable wall.
Weird
I just
rule
don't
for MLB.
Mind it.
You can't open or close a roof halfway through a game.
Because it makes different
conditions for each side. Yeah, you have to decide ahead of time if you're going to have the roof open or closed.
That's so wild. Okay, well, a couple of these. The biggest question for all 30 teams, and I'm not going to hit every single one of them, but we'll start with the Atlanta Braves. This is, again, an article from CBS Sports.
Okay.
What would you say that theirs is or your biggest question for the Atlanta Braves?
For the Braves, it's the rotation. And I think that the question – I wrote about this morning. Do you put Didier Fuentes into the rotation – or do you leave him as a long reliever and send him back to Gwinnett? Because he is the highest ceiling pitching prospect in the organization, and he can really help you if you let him stay in the majors and pitch versus a veteran retread like a Martin Perez or something.
According to CBS Sports, when does Didier Fuentes get his chance?
This must have been a few days ago, because I think they announced on Saturday he was going to make the roster. I'm guessing this came out like Thursday or Friday or something.
Either
way.
So this was 7 hours ago.
Who wrote it?
It was Chris Towers.
I know Chris. We're friends.
What a guy.
Cool.
Wow.
There we go, man.
Are we friends?
He's a Marlins fan living in New York City. Wild.
As they are.
Brutal.
Right?
Brutal. Yeah. Okay, we're going to go to...
Throw him a little slurve.
The Houston Astros. Their biggest question for 2026.
They've got too many infielders right now.
Are you scrolling with me?
Hang on. Christian Walker at first base. They have Carlos Correa at third, Jeremy Pena at short, but I think he's going to be hurt to start the year. Altuve's back at second. Where does Isak Paredes go? And the issue here is Paredes is the number one pulled air hitter in baseball, and his swing is perfect for that ballpark. There's no other ballpark he's going to produce as many home runs as that ballpark. So where does he play? Yordan's your DH. So like... Now, I think Pena's out to start the year, so Correa can play short and Paredes can play third for a couple weeks. But when Pena's back, you've got one more guy than you have spots in the infield. Do you try to move like Jose Altuve back to left? That was a disaster last year. What do you do?
Was that right?
According to CBS, how will they find playing time for everybody? All right, jeez. Los Angeles Angels. This is the question that everybody in America has been asking for the past
Mike Trout.
Decade. Yeah. Will they get one more vintage year? Of Mike Trout.
I hope so. I love Mike Trout.
A very difficult one, the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Roki Sasaki's in the rotation, and he's not only been not good in spring, he's been bad. Like, he's been awful in spring, to the point where I thought he was going to start in AAA, and instead, they said the other day he's going to be in the rotation. I don't think that lasts very long, because he has legitimately been awful this year with the Dodgers in spring.
We call him the baseball nerd, and it's the most complimentative insult that you could ever give to anybody. For the Los Angeles Dodgers, can Roki Sasaki figure it all out?
A texter in the text box just said, my boss wishes I knew as much about my job as Lindsay knows about his. So,
if you think about it, this is kind of my job.
I think it is your job.
I do have a full-time job, but baseball is kind of my job, and I'm trying to make it my full-time
job.
Pittsburgh Pirates.
We're talking Auburn.
Okay, can they... It's either going to be, can they actually generate, like, offense to match the pitching, or is this the year where O'Neill Cruz finally figures out, like, how to be an actual guy? Because he can hit the ball incredibly hard, but he's had motivation issues, he's had swing and miss issues. He has the tools of a superstar and the work ethic of, like, one of us. So is this the year where he can figure it out? Or it's just, can the offense, they brought all these pieces in, can it be good enough to support a really good pitching staff?
No, it is. It is specifics.
O'Neill Cruz?
Is O'Neill Cruz ready to live up to the hype?
Geez. I love it.
Jeez. That's impressive, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
Very nice.
I was hoping you'd do Arizona, because I have thoughts on like Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly, but I don't know what their question is. I'm trying to think about what else would their question
be. I believe their question, I saw it at the very top, I believe it was, is Zach Gallen's bounce back going to be worth it? Last one, Washington Nationals, and then we're done.
Can they look like they're starting to come out of the rebuild, I would think. I'm trying to think about, other than that, what would the other storyline be? Because like they've been...
It is on the offense, but think specifics.
Oh, specifics. Okay, right. They've done players for this.
Yes.
It's either going to be Dylan Cruz or James Wood. And they optioned Dylan Cruz to AAA, so it's going to be James Wood. Another superstar tools, but does he have enough tools? Like, does he have the ability to make enough contact and cut down the swing and miss and strikeouts to be a superstar to match the tools that he has?
It is unfortunately a guy who only hit .223 in the back half of the season. Oh, wait. Can James Wood make enough contact?
Jeez.
He's the best for a reason.
Nicely done,
baseball
sir.
Guru, I think you said.
Baseball guru.
Baseball nerd.
Yes, baseball genius.
It's unfortunate that you just scrolled on the same article with me, and we just did that all
Yeah, we didn't
radio.
Share that link with you in the before the show or whatever. No, that's impressive and excited for Major League Baseball. But we're in the current state of excitement in terms of Auburn baseball, right? Yeah. The Tigers, a top five team. I know a couple of rankings dropped them to 6 and then maybe 7 today as well because of them losing the series to Texas. But Auburn baseball is very, very good. And I think, Lindsay, because you cover Auburn as well, it's difficult to explain to some fans who maybe are just now coming around to this Auburn baseball organization. Yes, losing the series is upsetting to Texas, but it's not detrimental. The season isn't over because you lost a home series to the second-ranked team in the nation. Auburn is still a very good baseball team.
I think that's the biggest part of it is like, yeah, number two in the country. That's going to happen. Auburn wasn't expected to win more than one game in this series anyway. And through the first two games, Auburn had scored the exact same number of runs as Texas and had allowed the exact same number of runs as Texas. It was only game three where they actually kind of stumbled and couldn't do much. The story for Auburn that weekend was just runners left on base.
What?
The Tigers had so many opportunities to drive guys in. They left 32 on base across those three games.
God, 32.
And, you know, you're going to have Nani on in just a little while. That's not his job. That's Gabe Gross's job. But I guarantee you Nani's going to have something to say if you ask him about, like we're better than that. Like, we have to be better than that. This is the first time the Tigers have had to face elite pitching all the way through a rotation and bullpen for all three games. You face good starters so far. You faced a good reliever here and there, but this is the first time they've had to consistently do it all series.
Most teams don't have that.
And doing it with one of the best closers in the country last year, who is now Texas's Game 3 starter, which makes things just unfair.
Yeah, the reigning freshman of the year, not in the SEC, but like in baseball, Dylan Volantis, who also is a dude that does a lot of really unusual stuff. He's like 6'6", and he's like a string bean. He's like 190 pounds, but he's 6'6", he throws from a really high kind of slot, and so everything's coming downhill. He's got a big breaking ball off of a fastball, and he's not throwing incredibly hard, but he's so tall he's releasing it like 5 feet in front of the plate. And so the perceived velocity is a lot higher, and it's just, he's a hard dude to figure out when you are on your A game, and if you're not on your A game, you get something like that. They still got him out of the game quicker than I kind of thought they would. Auburn's been good at doing that this year, getting starters their pitch count up, getting them out of the game. The problem was Texas is the first team they've played that every single reliever they're throwing in there is also one of the best relievers in the country.
Yeah.
Auburn's not had to deal with that for three games, and they just weren't able to get the job done. I think if they match up again, it would still be somebody would win two games, somebody would win one game, and Auburn could be 2-1 instead of 1-2 against Texas if they replayed the series.
And I think that's why there's a whole lot of confidence and motivation for this team of how nice is it and how good of a problem is it to say that if UCLA is not the best team in the country, it's Texas,
yeah,
and you were upset that you had so many chances to beat what was kind of the product in college baseball, yet you were only able to steal one of them. I think that shows the overriding confidence that this Butch Thompson squad is going to be just fine.
Yeah, like UCLA, you know, they're 21-2, and they've played some good teams.
Are you buying it?
That's the thing. They played some good teams. They run ruled TCU. They swept TCU, number seven in the country. One of those was a run rule. They've beat Tulane. They beat Tennessee. They beat Texas. They run ruled Texas A&M. They beat Mississippi State in extras. They're a top five team.
Yep.
They run. They beat Ohio State by 10 in game one. Then they run ruled them.
Uh huh.
But
yes.
But
we have a new terminology on here, Lindsay, and it's comma but. We love our conjunctions here on the show.
Comma okay. But has made a presence.
I'm going to go with of course, but maybe of course they're really good and they've played really good teams. But maybe they also haven't been or aren't going to be tested all season like an SEC team would be tested.
Yeah,
and like the RPI right now. For UCLA is not bad, but they're number six in RPI, but SEC teams just face right now. Auburn's number two in RPI on NCAA.com. They've already played the number one team in Texas. They've beat the number four team in Florida State, and so many of their opponents are on here: Alabama, Florida, Mississippi State. Like so many of their opponents are in the top 15, 20.
And for those that want to hate on that loss to Cincinnati, Cincinnati's in this conversation as well.
Oh yeah, Cincinnati's number 13 in RPI.
Dude, they made a tear those 2 weeks. They just went everywhere and just took names along with.
Yeah, Cincinnati was on the warpath.
Yeah, they were.
Like UCLA is probably going to host a regional. UCLA might even be able to get to a super regional. Do I think UCLA's a College World Series team? Probably not. If they get there, do I think they're going to win games in Omaha? Probably not. But they're a good team. But it's really hard to count out any team from the SEC because UCLA has been tested at times. Any SEC team gets tested every single week, and Auburn has right. the hardest schedule in the country. Auburn's non-con was full of a ton of tests.
Yeah.
Nebraska, Cincinnati, the tournament, Florida State, and everybody. They did nothing but get tested all spring. I feel good about Auburn, you know, still hosting a regional, still hosting a super regional, and making it to Omaha.
Before we take a break and come back and preview the game tonight and Alabama, and I know you have a thought as well, Jacob, how many teams right now host a regional in the SEC, Lindsay, and how many teams would you say are set to host a super regional in the Southeastern Conference?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Tough question. Two SEC weekends in.
Yeah, 2 weekends in. Tough question.
Good thing is that nothing will change, and this is concrete
this
evidence.
This is locked
right
in stone, right?
Correct.
Okay. All right, let me just name teams real quick. Texas, Auburn, Mississippi State, I think are all national seeds. I think,
okay.
provided they handle their business, they're locks to be national seeds. I think Ole Miss will host a regional. That's four. Kind of go through here. I think Georgia, Texas A&M. I want to say Kentucky's not as bad as everybody thinks they might be. I don't know if they're going to host a regional, but I think you're probably at seven teams host a regional, if not eight. And I think for supers, you probably have three to four national seeds.
And nothing scares a host team more than a two-seeded SEC squad coming to town.
Oh, man.
I mean, people hate to see that coming.
Yeah. If you want to be like the number 14 seed in the, you know, in the tournament and get to host a super, on the other side of the bracket, hope there's a number two SEC squad.
Yeah, pretty
because
much.
Because that lets you be a number 14 overall seed, you know, one hosting a regional, and you might get a super because the SEC squad's going to knock off whoever it is, right?
Yeah, Florida or Oklahoma is one of the two seeds.
Yeah, exactly.
My goodness. Going to Eastern Carolina or East Carolina.
Yeah, that's a knee knocker for sure. Okay.
You know, Southern Miss, maybe.
Yes.
Although yeah. Southern Miss, top five RPI squad.
Very solid.
Don't overlook very solid for sure. Okay, we'll take a break. We'll come back, wrap up hour number one with Lindsey Crosby. We'll talk about Auburn baseball tonight against South Alabama, this weekend against Alabama. That coming up to wrap up hour number one right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. This is the Tuesday edition of On the Line. And while we are wrapping up hour number one, we are sadly wrapping up our conversation with Lindsey Crosby of Braves Today. He covers Auburn baseball. We're going to allow him to plug all of that so you can keep up with him because he has proven his baseball knowledge today. He has proven that he is worthy of your follow and your support. And Auburn baseball in action tonight. They head away from Plainsman Park and will not return for over a week. But they head down to Montgomery, which was formerly known as Riverwalk, and for most people, they will continue to call it that. And yep, if you want to call it Dabo's Park, you can. But South Alabama tonight, and then heading to Tuscaloosa this weekend to the Alabama Crimson Tide, who got swept by Kentucky in the opening weekend of the SEC play. And then they just magically fixed it, and they swept Florida.
Not only did they sweep Florida, they no-hit Florida in game one, and nobody talks about it because Auburn walked off Texas.
Yeah.
Because of Bristol Carter.
Fantastic.
And
that dude was shoving for Bama, though.
Texas's center fielder, the baseball god's coming after him for taunting a little bit on that second home run he hit.
Karma.
Yeah. And but like nobody talked about the Florida the Alabama no hitter because Texas got walked off by Auburn.
Darn.
But I guess real quick for South Alabama, for some reason, this kind of neutral site thing, they always seem to play Auburn. It's one of those things where the in-state teams get hyped up to play your Auburns, your Alabamas, things like that. And it's not necessarily just the in-states. I do want to point out that, like, Texas, before they got swept by Kentucky, like, yeah, they beat Troy, but after that, they lost to South Alabama. Like, South Alabama beat this Alabama team last Tuesday. Now, Alabama went to them, like they went to Mobile, but this team is probably a little bit better than I think a lot of people just assume, given that it's USA. I do think that Auburn has the advantage because of what they do with their rotation, and Andreas Alvarez is the most qualified midweek starter in college baseball. If you see another game two on the weekend kind of slip up from your starter at Auburn, you may see Alvarez move to the weekend. But also Griffin Graves threw a bullpen last week. There's been talk about he is the he was expected to be their number one coming into the season. Obviously now it's Jake Marciano, but
who's just unbelievable,
who has been phenomenal. I was talking to somebody today who covers college baseball, and he said, like, just based on production right now, not draftability, not stuff, whatever, just on production, he had Jake Marciano as the number one pitcher in college baseball this season.
Jeez.
He's like, now he won't win the awards because it's going to go to the what I call the stuff monsters and the draft picks who are pumping 100 and all that stuff. Your Paul Skeens guys. But they had him as the number one pitcher in college baseball this year.
How about that? Well, Auburn is going to be just fine, even though they dropped the series to Texas. They play South Alabama tonight. This guy will be covering it, Lindsey Crosby. Plug it on, my friend. Tell people where to find you.
Woo, let me take a deep breath here. All right, the Atlanta Braves content, bravestoday.com and the Braves Today podcast. Both of those are daily. Post-game shows on Locked On Braves and Locked On Sports Atlanta after every Atlanta Braves game. We also have Locked On MLB Game Night covering every single MLB game. I'm on the Thursday, Friday, Saturday shift, and the Auburn baseball coverage, thebarnauburn.com, and we do live post-game shows on Locked On Auburn after every single Auburn game.
There he is. He has everything you need for baseball coverage. Follow him, Lindsey Crosby. Great to see you, buddy. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Hour number one's in the book. Stick around. Carl Nunnemaker from Auburn baseball joins us to start hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7 Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, and by myself in the studio. Well, we got our producer, Brandon, in here. But in terms of conversations on the microphone, we had three of us in here in the first hour. And the best man has remained. No, I'm kidding. Christian Griffin is no longer here today. He just walked out. He's heading over to Lee Scott Academy. He's got some baseball going on this afternoon over on the Lee Scott Sports Network on Tiger Country 104.5. The Warriors taking on Alabama Christian Academy. That game at 4:30 this afternoon. So about an hour and a half from now. So he's going to pack up, head that way, and call that so you can have some Tuesday afternoon baseball on the radio dial if you would like to tune in for that. So he is gone, but man, how much fun was hour number one with our guy, Lindsey Crosby. That's right, of Braves Today, also covering Auburn baseball for the Barn as well. He is our baseball go-to man. He is our guru, our genius, our nerd, and we love him so desperately and so deeply. He was in the studio for all of hour number one. We talked a ton of Major League Baseball, Atlanta Braves, on how they've got 2.5 guys in the rotation for the start of the season, and they're just going to kind of piece it together and figure it out the rest of the way. We also talked about other teams across Major League Baseball, talked about the possibility of the 2027 season not happening or not starting on time, which is pretty crazy. Also dove into Auburn baseball as the Tigers are back in action tonight against South Alabama in Montgomery, and then, of course, going to Tuscaloosa this weekend. So a full hour of baseball was in the first hour of today's show. If you missed it, you could check it out in the podcast center on our station website at ESPNAU.com. And coming up here in hour number two, we've got two coaches from Auburn University joining us in this hour. At 3:30, we're going to sit down and talk with Jessica Braswell, the head coach of Auburn Equestrian, the best equestrian team in the country, because the regular season is done. They finished it on a 9-2 record. They're hosting the SEC Championships this weekend at the Auburn Equestrian Center. So we talked to her earlier this morning. We'll have that for you at 3:30. But we start the second hour with a guy who is a key piece and a key portion of the Auburn baseball success. And we continue our weekly sit-downs with members of the Auburn baseball team. We told you the Tigers head to Montgomery tonight to take on South Alabama, then Alabama in Tuscaloosa this weekend. So this is Auburn baseball associate head coach Carl Nunnemaker. Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, as we continue talking Auburn baseball as we did all of hour number one here on the show today. And man, it's been dominating our airwaves as of late because Auburn baseball is playing extremely well, and we're excited to continue a weekly visit with a member of Auburn baseball. And this week, returning to the show, returning to the station, is Associate Head Coach Carl Nunnemaker. Carl, it is great to hear from you, my friend. I'm glad to have you back on our show this season, and I hope in your world.
Well, it's always great to be back, Jacob. Looking forward to another week that presents new challenges, and I'm just getting ready. It's the middle of the year right now, and every week is a new one, and we're just focused hard on trying to play good baseball.
Well, Coach, I'm sure you feel the same way, but it's wild to look at the calendar right now and realize that we're in the final week of March and we're about to be in the true heart of SEC play. I just don't know where the season has gone already.
Yeah, you know, the regular season is 14 weekends, and there's obviously midweeks in the middle, but there's 14 weekends in a regular season, and this weekend coming up will be the seventh one. So you're really looking at it right about the halfway point. It's amazing how fast it goes. There's, you know, it's four games every week, but at the same time, there's a lot of baseball left to be played, like you said, with, you know, with eight conference weekends still to go and a lot of good challenges in front of us.
Well, let's go back and recap what this last week was for Auburn baseball. 2-2 on the week. And, you know, some people would hear that and say, 500, okay, I guess that's fine. But when you're going up against top three teams in the nation, beating Georgia Tech in the midweek by a score of 9-2, and then taking a game on Friday night against the Texas Longhorns, I know you would like to win them all, obviously, but going 2-2 in that stretch against those teams, I think, Coach, is very impressive.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously in baseball you play so much and every day can have a different story. The overall story of the week was probably just, gosh, what unbelievable support from our fans.
Mm-hmm.
Almost 30,000 people, you know, came to the games this week, you know, and it was a midweek record of almost 6,500 and a weekend record of almost 23,000. And you start thinking about that and the home field advantage and the environment that has become at Plainsman Park. And it played a big deal and it played a big role. Tuesday was one of those games where really just about everything went right. You know, we kept one of the best hitting teams in the country without an extra base hit and maybe three total hits. Maybe walked them a few more times than we would have liked, but really just an overall great job by the pitching staff to keep them down. And a good job by the offense to be opportunistic and swing the bat, some slugging, some extra base hits and things like that. Just a really overall great game. And then, you know, obviously every time you play a game, it's a new story. And then, you know, the Friday Texas game was another example of how you can feel the environment at Plainsman Park help. And, you know, when we got some runners on base in the ninth inning, the place got really loud. Mm-hmm. It's a harder place to play for an opponent now than it was, you know, just a handful of years ago. And we're fortunate to have, you know, a big swing at the end of the game and to keep a good team to, you know, three runs on that day. And just a crazy, crazy finish. And wild things happen, you know, in college baseball. They definitely do. And then almost had a chance to do it again on Saturday. Probably just, you know, got behind a little bit too much, but once again had the go-ahead run at the plate in the eighth and the ninth inning. And when you're down six, being able to come back and do that and really be a swing away from winning the game, there's some positives. And then Sunday was a day that, you know, was a little bit different. Just, you know, didn't really get the hit, didn't really get too much going, and just quite honestly got beat on Sunday. But looking back at it, you want to win every game. You definitely do. You want to compete well, you want to have a chance to win. And we felt like we did that, you know, in those first three games. And it's time for a whole new series of challenges as we move to this week.
Well, we had the opportunity last week, me and some coworkers here, to hear Coach Thompson speak at an event later, or I guess last week during the midweek, and he had talked about the idea that this ball club had not gone through a ton of tribulation yet, had not gone through a ton of criticism or you know, just trial and such. And I feel like this past weekend may have been that, huh, Coach? I mean, where you lose the series, you do get the win on Friday, had chances on the comeback Saturday, and then, as you mentioned, get shut out on Sunday. Do you think this was the first big challenge for this team? And if so, what are you looking for in response for your guys tonight and into the weekend?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously it's back-to-back losses. And then, you know, losing a series at home, you want to win your home series. You also understand that, you know, there is some randomness in baseball and sometimes it just comes down to, you know, getting a swing and miss at the right time on defense or getting a hit.
Mm-hmm.
But we would like to continue to grow and we'd like to continue to get better. That's been a theme all year. If you look at our team, you know, it's not a very old team. It's, you know, it's some sophomore, you know, two sophomores in the weekend rotation, a few
yeah.
sophomores right in the middle of the lineup. And, you know, players can get better. And players can not only get better in the offseason, they can get better during the season if they take the feedback from the results that they're getting, whether it be personally or team-wise. But really, one of the ways you get a team better is to have a bunch of players continue to grow, right? And to then keep a team together. And so our goal all along has been to grow, has been to get good work in and continue to try to grow and develop and play better as the season moves forward. forward. And really, that's it this week. Every week is going to be big challenges. I mean, Georgia Tech and Texas were two top five teams, but you really look at every week and you have really good opponents. You know, South Alabama's won twice as many games as they've lost. Alabama just comes off a big home sweep against Florida. You know, they've won a bunch more games than they've lost this year. And that will be the theme in our schedule the rest of the way. We don't really have any weeks or series of teams that are not playing good baseball. And so we're going to have to play good baseball and focus on our brand and trying to get a little better and a little crisper and rise to the challenges that the season brings.
We're talking with Auburn Baseball Associate Head Coach Carl Nonnemaker here on ESPN 106.7. And want to talk about the game tonight down in Montgomery, what was formerly known as Riverwalk Stadium. We'll take some time to I guess, train our brains to not call it that, right? Dabo's Park now, the new name there. But you're taking on a South Alabama squad. They're gritty, they're feisty, and it's another opportunity for a midweek game against an in-state opponent, Coach. You've been around the game long enough, especially here in Alabama. You know how those teams like the UABs, the Jacksonville States, the South Alabamas, they see Auburn and they give it everything they've got. So what are you looking for tonight from the squad to go and try and get a nice win and get back into the win column?
Well, like we said, you expect really, really worthy opponents at this time of the year and the teams that we're playing. You can look at their records, right? You can look at the leagues they're in, and you can look at their records and tell that these are all very good baseball teams. South Alabama will be a very good baseball team. You know, they've got a pretty good left-hander that they've started, you know, the past couple midweeks. He gave Alabama some trouble last week. You know, when they won that Tuesday game. So we're expecting a team that's been, you know, moving the ball around, producing some offense. You know, they've been pitching solid. And every weekend and every week we're going to have that. So it's a lot more about us. It's a lot more about trying to find a way to be a little bit crisper, to try to take some good at-bats, you know, start a week off the right way like that. Hopefully Andreas Alvarez, who has been very solid for us, can give us another good start.
Yeah.
And that can provide some momentum heading into a challenging week.
And yeah, and then you mentioned it, Alabama on the road this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, first pitch 6 o'clock Friday, 7 o'clock Saturday, and then 1 o'clock in the getaway game on Sunday. And Coach, how convenient for Alabama to just figure it out this past weekend, right? They get swept by Kentucky, turn around and sweep Florida. I know you guys probably don't look at that as much as we do in the media and on the radio and things, but that's an Alabama team that maybe truly did figure it out in a big series in the Iron Bowl of baseball, huh?
Well, it's kind of back to the theme of each week, you know, you have new opportunities to perform. And baseball is one of those games. You know, we're in a culture down here that is a lot football driven, and you know, there's one game a week and everything like that. And baseball is just a different game where, yes, every single time you lace them up, you want to win the game. You want to win every single pitch that's thrown in that game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to win every inning. But the reality is that there are ebbs and flows, you know, in the SEC. You know, you look around the SEC, the best records in the SEC are 4-2 in the league. There's not a team that's out there at 5-1 or 6-0. There's a lot of parity. There's a lot of really good teams. And the goal for us is we know Alabama's a good team. Alabama has been a very good team, you know, and they've been a big challenge, you know, for years. And we just have to get ourselves in a position where we're ready to perform and answer the things that the game's going to require us to do.
Well, several opportunities for Auburn baseball to do just that. Again, tonight down in Montgomery, taking on South Alabama at Dabo's Park, and then going to Tuscaloosa this weekend against Alabama. And here's the good news, Coach. It's your third SEC series of the year, but you've already gone on the road one time, and you faced a ton of adversity in Como, getting the sweep of the Tigers and having to do so with or without the lights there. You get to do that now with Alabama, where it's maybe not familiar territory, but it's not the first road series of the season. So hopefully the guys kind of have a little bit of a routine with all of that.
Yeah, and that's another reason why we always try to get on the road if we can in those first 4 weeks of the year. You know, this year it was heading down to Dallas, Texas.
Right.
To try to be a little bit more ready when the league comes around the first time. Obviously, we've been to Columbia. We know that each each weekend, you know, obviously each road trip is going to be a challenge. Anything can happen. The lights could go out. You could have weather delays. You could have game time changes. And you really just try to get a team to be ready to go when it's time to play ball and be ready to attack. And that's our goal this week, to try to help our players get a little bit better and then be ready to roll out there today and be ready to compete and do the best we can against South Alabama to play our best brand of baseball and then take that into the weekend. That's the goal.
Well, as associate head coach, and again, Carl Nunnemaker of Auburn Baseball with us here on ESPN 106.7, you are evaluating everything with this team. What has been the most impressive? Is it the starting pitchers who continue to fill up the zone, who don't walk guys, don't give up free bases, and are just shutting down guys day in and day out? Or is it the offense where you've got dudes hitting 352, 377, right, with the McCrane brothers, or Guevara getting back into a flow, Bristol Carter hitting 387 this year? I mean, what has been some of the more impressive things that you have seen kind of looking over the entire program as associate head coach?
Well, the first thing is the consistency of the starting pitching, the amount of strikes that we've thrown on a consistent basis. And that is how you can have a chance to win. That is how you can kind of have a pretty good run like we went on there for a little while. Just, you know, we've had four starters. They've been the same four starters all year long. You know, obviously this was probably the first weekend where we probably got knocked off center a little bit on a weekend, mm-hmm. you know, with Texas jumping out a little bit on Saturday and Sunday. But the momentum that we've had from being able to get games underway and be competitive with our starts has helped the bullpen to set itself and to be in the right spots and helped us to stay a little bit more on script. That's been a huge piece. And then, you know, some big play from some guys that have stepped up. And the first one that comes to mind is Bristol Carter. You know, he's really been a huge spark for us. Starting down there when we went to Dallas, you know, just having a huge weekend against really good teams, and has been that leadoff guy that has given us, you know, a lot of energy and a lot of momentum. And then once again this weekend, you know, with the hit on Friday night that ended up ending the game. So, you know, we're excited about our position players. They're working extremely hard. They're ready to play. But you don't have the type of consistency that we've had. And now that doesn't give us any extra credit for the future, but you don't have the type of consistency that we've felt for the last 5 or 6 weeks without some guys standing up there on that bump, throwing a bunch of strikes and giving the team a chance to win and making the other team beat you.
Well, Auburn continues to be a top five team in college baseball, no matter what ranking system that you look at. 19-4 overall, still 4-2 in SEC play. Heading out on the road and won't play a home game for quite some time. You've got South Alabama tonight in Montgomery, Alabama this weekend in Tuscaloosa. Don't forget the rematch with Georgia Tech coming up a week from today in Atlanta before returning home next weekend for Arkansas on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. He is the associate head coach coach for Auburn baseball, Carl Nunnemaker, with us on ESPN 106.7. Coach, always appreciate your time. It's great to get you back here on the show this season. Good luck tonight. Safe travels to and from Montgomery, okay?
Thanks again, and War Eagle.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, back inside the studio here at ESPN 106.7. This is the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Thanks to Carl Nunnemaker of Auburn Baseball joining us. And first time we've talked to him this year. He's so great. He is just built for radio, it sounds like, but also built for baseball, and a guy that has been such a big part of Auburn's success over the years, and always appreciate his time for talking to us. And again, we talk to a member of Auburn baseball every single week. We've talked to Butch Thompson a couple of times. We've now talked to Coach Tieford and Coach Nunnemaker. We've talked with several players on the team as well. And so every Tuesday throughout baseball season, you can expect an interview here during our show from the Auburn baseball a team, whether it's the staff or a player. And as we mentioned, Auburn baseball in action tonight. They're taking on South Alabama. You can listen to the radio broadcast with Andy Burch and Brad Law. They'll be on the call over on Wings 94.3. Thankfully, the NIT did not cause any other issues like it did over the weekend. Of course, we kept baseball on Wings 94.3. We actually had men's basketball here on ESPN 106.7. But as of right now, none of the conflicts there. Baseball tonight on Wings 94.3, and then basketball tomorrow on Wings 94.3, as the Auburn men's team will have one final game at home, and it is actually the final game at home, as Auburn will take on Nevada. Tigers open up as a 9.5-point favorite against Nevada tomorrow night. The Wolfpack inside of Neville Arena. It's a late tip. It's an 8 o'clock tip, better than the 9 o'clock Tuesday tip it was the first time, but an 8 o'clock Wednesday tip. Auburn and Nevada in the NIT quarterfinals. You actually have a couple of games coming up tonight if you want to keep up with the bracket and keep up with the tournament, right on what Auburn could be seeing in the next couple of weeks. Wichita State and Tulsa, St. Joseph's and New Mexico tonight. Auburn and Nevada tomorrow, Illinois State and Dayton, baby. The Flyers, go, go, Dayton Flyers. You know that chant, Brandon? Oh, you, oh God, this guy. Well, no, I love the Flyers. And, yes, Auburn tomorrow night against Nevada. It is truly the final home game. If they win, they'll move on to the semifinals, which are being played up in Indianapolis. That'll take place in the middle of next week. And then, man, you start looking ahead at the rest of the week. That's tomorrow. And then you've got the NCAA tournament right back in action. So Auburn baseball tonight, Auburn basketball tomorrow, NCAA tournament Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It really is a busy time. Auburn baseball will be back up in action in SEC play. Heading to Tuscaloosa this weekend. And my goodness, did that series get a little bit more interesting. We talked about it a little bit in hour one with Lindsey Crosby. But the idea that Alabama got swept to open up SEC play against Kentucky, and all they did was turn it around and sweep Florida and threw a no-hitter, the first one since like the 30s or 40s or something for Alabama baseball. Pretty impressive there for the Crimson Tide. So that'll be a ton of fun and just so much going on, really, in the next several weeks of the sports world. But very excited to continue a trend, which we will do so after our bottom of the hour break, of talking to a bunch of Auburn University head coaches. We've talked with tennis, gymnastics, as we've been doing with Jeff Graba, volleyball, and you know, you name it, we've got it here on the show. Of course, baseball and some others as well. But Auburn Equestrian will be hosting the SEC Championships coming up this weekend at the Auburn Equestrian Center, which it's on a basically kind of a rotation, right, in Auburn. First time they've had it in 4 years here on the Plains. Auburn Equestrian, obviously, one of the more successful programs on the Plains, and a team and a program that has several national titles under its belt. They get to host the SEC Championships this weekend with four teams in town. Auburn hosting. You've got the semifinals on Friday and the championship on Saturday. And it's a big advantage, as you can imagine, to host it in your hometown at your facilities. And head coach Jessica Braswell of Auburn Equestrian is going to join us coming up next to talk about that, talk about getting hot down the stretch and what that means for the rest of postseason aspirations. We continue conversations with Auburn head coaches, and Jessica Braswell of Equestrian joins us next.
Way through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. We continue what has been a busy winter and now into a very busy spring of talking with Auburn University coaches, head coaches, that is, from several different sports, and a coach, a frequent flyer here on the station and on the show, Coach Jessica Braswell of Auburn University Equestrian. It's so good to see you. I know it is a very busy week, so we appreciate you taking the time to come in and join us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Well, there is a ton going on. You guys are hosting this little thing called the SECs this week where, you know, championships are on the line and you're competing for that and then postseason seeding and things like that. But my goodness, how quickly did the regular season come and go in the spring session for you guys?
Yeah, it went fast. It always does it, but it seems to still always catch me by surprise 15 years in how fast the spring goes. So, a good end to our spring. So we've closed out senior day against Texas A&M beginning of March, won that one, which was great. They had beaten us in the fall, so it was good to get even with them in the regular season, and a great performance from our kids to finish up. And then we've been getting ready for SECs these last few weeks.
Yeah, well, the first spring meet, and it was in January, but still the spring season, right? So from January 31st here to almost the end of March, I mean, you squeezed a lot of meets in that time and a lot of big meets. I mean, top 10s, top 5s. I mean, this has been an impressive stretch for you and your squad. Regular season finishing up 9-2 overall. Does that make you a happy coach? Does that make you a hungry coach? Where do we sit with the regular season wrap-up?
Yeah, I'm very happy with where we are. The reality is that I think we did a lot of good work in the regular season, but now is when it matters. Mm-hmm. And we've put ourselves in the position we wanted to be in as far as we got the top seed for SECs. We have every opportunity in front of us to keep the top seed going to the national championship if we're able to win the tournament this weekend. So it's all in our hands. We control our own destiny, which is what you want and what you want out of the regular season. I really like how the spring built. We had an okay meet when we were at Tennessee Martin in January, got the win, kind of an average performance. And then we went to South Carolina and had that loss at South Carolina, which mm-hmm. I think kind of kicked us into gear a little bit. And then a really good stretch to end the spring beating SMU and then going and getting the win at Georgia was huge. We haven't done that, I think, since 2022. Mm. And then a big win at home against A&M. You're one of the two teams that has beaten us this year,
right.
And so we were able to get that win. So I'm very happy with where we are, and now we just have to keep moving forward and getting better.
And a best of three, basically, with Texas A&M now, because that's who you'll compete with first on Friday in the SEC Championships, which, again, Auburn is hosting at the Auburn University Equestrian Center. We'll get to that in just a moment. But throughout the regular season, for your sport in particular, because there's so much happening, right? So many individual riders and individual events and all of it adding up for the team and things like that. What do you, as a head coach, look for in terms of improvement from your team from the first meet in late January of the spring session anyway, all the way up to right now with the SECs? What does improvement look like for you and your sport in particular?
I think an improvement in consistency. That's what we've talked okay. about all spring. You know, we met last night and I asked the team, we went through every spring meet and I asked them, like, what did you learn? What did we learn from this one? What did we learn from that one? And I think it's just building on those things and trying not to repeat mistakes, trying to make sure we correct them and get better and consistency across all four events. That's going to be key for us this weekend, is we have to be consistent in all four events. We got to go out there. The meets we've won this year, we've been consistent, but we've also had an event where we've been able to go big and go win 4 points or 5 points. And that's what we're looking for. We'll look mm-hmm. for a fast start on Friday, but also just executing at a high level across all four events.
Well, coming down the stretch, again, you mentioned it, beating number four SMU 13-7, going on the road and taking down number three Georgia 11-9, and then a dominant senior day victory over Texas A&M by a score of 15-4. We're talking with Auburn University head equestrian coach Jessica Braswell on ESPN 106.7, and here we are, SEC Championship Week in four. The first time, and you were telling me 4 years, it's kind of on that rotation, right? It's going to be here in Auburn. I mean, how special is it? We'll get to the advantages and maybe some of the disadvantages too, but just how special is it to be hosting this again here at Auburn?
Yeah, we're so excited. We've been looking forward to this. I think that being able to be in Auburn and have the Auburn family come out and support this team is huge. We talk all the time about there's no environment like Auburn and mm-hmm. equestrian, and we have an advantage just by being here because of our fans and because of the energy and the momentum that that helps our team have. So I'm really, really excited to have it here. And we want to put on a great event for all the student athletes and all the teams so everybody has a great experience. And I think just from an administration standpoint, from our staff, everybody who's worked to put this championship on, couldn't be more excited to do it and to have people come out and to watch great competition between these SEC schools. I think we're four of the top five schools right now nationally ranked. So it's going to be a great tournament. There's going to be great competition and probably a good preview of what the national championship could look like.
Well, I mean, we talk about it, and I feel like every sport and every head coach that I talk to throughout the athletics season here on ESPN is the SEC is just better than everybody else. I mean, it's the SEC and everybody chasing second in terms of conference pride. And the fact that it's Auburn, South Carolina, Georgia, and Texas A&M, like you mentioned, four of the top five teams in the country. I mean, this prepares you for anything that you're going to see the rest of the way.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, we're always battle tested when we get to the postseason because we have to play each other twice. Nobody else in the country has to do that.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, you know, we've seen tough competition all year. We've had that experience on the road. So we're ready. And now we just have to go out and execute and be consistent and do the things we've been doing. That's one of the things we've talked about is we don't want the postseason to be any different. We don't need to make big changes. We just need to be us, keep doing what we're doing. Keep doing what's worked, and I think that's going to be key for us this weekend.
Well, I know it's a very busy week. Again, the SEC Championship for Equestrian here in Auburn at the Auburn University Equestrian Center, and there's so much outside stuff for you, especially, and I'm sure your staff and everyone involved, of making sure things are prepared properly, the other teams are taken care of, your team is taken care of. I mean, I can only imagine what your schedule and what your daily routine looks like right now. And then, oh, by the way, you still have to get ready to compete come Friday afternoon.
Yeah, you know, that's part of hosting, but and it's fun. We enjoy it. We're, like I said, excited just for people to be able to come out and see the event and hope that the student athletes from the other schools have a great experience. But it's a little different in this sport because in the postseason, it's the most neutral environment you're going to get because you ride neutral horses.
Right.
So the schools coming in, so Georgia, South Carolina, and A&M are also all bringing 12 horses in. So we've got an extra 36 horses at the facility.
That's so, wild.
We have some temporary stabling. We've got to have arena time for everybody, things like that. But we will get to compete on neutral horses. So that takes even though we're hosting, it'll be a fairly neutral event. That's where the Auburn crowd can make a huge difference for us in coming out. So we'll compete against A&M at 3 on Friday. That'll be our meet. Georgia and South Carolina will compete at 10. And the championship will be at 11 on Saturday.
Yeah, it's just the four. This isn't like the SEC basketball tournament or something. We're all 16 or whatever. There's not double-digit teams. It's four, but four of the best teams in the SEC, four of the best teams in the country. They will be at the Auburn University Equestrian Center. And I want to talk about that a little bit, what it looks like for fans who do want to be a part of this and should be a part of this on Friday afternoon and then Saturday, no matter who's involved on the 28th this coming weekend on Saturday. What does that look like for fans? Will it look like a normal home meet? Will it be even bigger and better because the SEC is involved? What does that look like for fans this weekend?
Yeah, so admission's free, which is great. And we'll still, for our 3 p.m. meet on Friday against A&M, it'll look similar to a regular season meet, and that we'll have our kids' zone. So pony rides, bouncy house, paint the pony. We're going to have some food trucks and concessions, all of those things. So come on after school, or if you're on spring break, a great way to spend the Friday afternoon. But admission's free. So that's the great
part. Can't beat that. Yeah.
That's the great part. And then same thing on Saturday, 11 a.m. on Saturday. Come, you know, watch a championship meet, and hopefully we can bring it back for Auburn.
And then for your team in particular, again, Jessica Braswell, the head coach of Auburn Equestrian, with us on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. What does this meet do for your squad in particular for the rest of postseason play, right? Because the SECs are great. You want to win the SEC title, but you're also chasing a national championship. So what does this weekend do, or maybe doesn't do, for your team in particular coming in and for what that means for other postseason aspirations?
Yeah, it's great preparation. You know, the days will be long. So I think I was saying we will report somewhere around 5:30 on Friday morning. Because our horses will go in the first meet, but we won't compete in it.
Okay.
And then we don't compete until 3 on Friday.
Wow.
And so just getting that practice with days like that, because that's what the national championship looks like. So that's great preparation. And we control our own destiny. You know, we want that top seed in Ocala. But we have to win this weekend. We have to do we have to do our job. We have to win this weekend because we're competing against three other top five teams. So the who wins matters is going to matter going into the seeding for the national championship. So I think it's great because we have an opportunity to win a championship in Auburn, and we also have an opportunity to position ourselves how we want going into the national championship end of April.
On Friday, again, that's this Friday, March 27th, South Carolina will go off against Georgia, 10 a.m., then Auburn against Texas A&M at 3 p.m. Are you excited for another matchup with Texas A&M? Again, they beat you the first time. You guys ran through them the second time. Are you excited for this best of three opportunity, or does it matter for you? You just you got to compete regardless, right? So is where do you stand on that category?
Yeah, I mean, we're excited. A&M's a great competitor. We think a little bit about it's about us, not really really doesn't really matter who we're playing. We have to do our part. But A&M's going to come in hungry. You know, they were just here, probably left with a bad taste in their mouth. So I fully expect that they're going to be ready to go. And they are one of the two teams that have beat us this year. So we know they're good. We know that they are going to be great competitors. And we just have to come out and fight for every point and execute. That's been the key, that the issues we've had this year have been lack of execution. So if we come out and do our job, we should be in pretty good shape.
What would you say before we let you go? What would you say your team and your riders, your girls, your organization, what are you guys doing best right now that you have the most confidence in going into SECs?
I think just the way they've come together as a team and the ownership that they have of their team. That's always big.
Okay.
You know, we try really hard for them to have ownership, and I don't want it all to be coach directed. Mm-hmm. We're there to steer the ship a little bit, but I want them to want to be there and to want to practice and to want to work hard and want to do those things. And they've really bought into that, and the work that they've done to get the facility ready and get the horses ready and all of that for the championship and doing it together. And I think that's the biggest thing in a sport that's an individual sport until they get to college, really learning to come together as a team. That's special. And that can be just that little bit of magic that you need to go on a championship run.
And I'll say this, you can't fake that. I mean, there's no, you can't make that up. You can't fake it. You can't just kind of get by with those types of things, and that doesn't happen overnight either, right? I mean, that's something that happened probably back in the fall that you started to see build, and now it's carrying into late March and hopefully a lot longer.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been working on it since August. You know, you bring a team of about 40 student athletes together, and you've got, you know, 10 or 12 new kids coming in August. It takes a minute to get everybody comfortable with each other and getting to know each other and working together as a team, but these guys have done that exceptionally well to this point, and that's, if you ask them, one of the things that they say is, this feels like a really close group. This feels like a really close team. And I think that that's going to be big for us going into postseason with long days, hard days, you know, a little bit of extra stress, a little bit of extra pressure. Mm-hmm. Being able to know that your teammates have your back and rely on your team is going to be big.
Auburn, the number one seed in the SEC tournament, hosting the SEC Equestrian Championship this weekend at the Auburn University Equestrian Center against South Carolina and Georgia at 10 a.m. If folks are available and free, they can attend that as well, right?
Absolutely.
You can go spend the whole day at the Equestrian Center. That's at 10 a.m. Then Auburn will compete against Texas A&M 3 o'clock Central Time Friday afternoon. Then the championship will be Saturday morning, March 28th at 11 a.m. at the Auburn University Equestrian Center. And then we'll have more postseason stuff coming up later on, but a very cool event and a very cool weekend here on the Plains. Head coach Jessica Braswell of Auburn Equestrian with us on ESPN 106.7. Coach, it's always great to see you. Great for your time. And I know it's a busy week, so try to relax, try to sleep, and, you know, limit it to like 4 cups of coffee a day, maybe not 5, okay?
I'll try.
Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, War Eagle.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been a fun second hour. Been a fun show today, man. We've had all sorts of coverage today. We had our guy Lindsey Crosby in the studio for hour number one. He is our baseball guru. He is with Braves Today and covers Auburn baseball for the Barn. So be sure you check him out on all social media. He is doing something with baseball basically every minute of every day. We talked all things Major League Baseball. Talked a lot of Atlanta Braves as well, and then of course dove into Auburn baseball, who's in action tonight against South Alabama, also this weekend against Alabama. So talked about that in the first hour. Then we talked to Carl Nunnemaker from Auburn Baseball, associate head coach of the Tigers. He joined us in this second hour to talk about the series against Texas, the game tonight against South, and then previewing this weekend against the Crimson Tide. And then we just got done talking with Jessica Braswell, the head coach of Auburn Equestrian, as they are hosting the SEC Championships this weekend. So that's a pretty loaded show, if you ask me. So if you missed any of it, you'll be able to go back and catch it with the podcast version of the show on our station website at ESPNAU.com in the podcast center. Christian is not in the studio. He is over at Lee Scott Academy, where the Warriors on the baseball field will be getting going in about 35 minutes or so. They'll be taking on Alabama Christian Academy, so you can tune into that over on the Lee Scott Sports Network on Tiger Country 104.5, TigerCountry.net in the Radio Alabama app. That's at 4:30. And then he's got more baseball coming up. And this weekend, he plays Cottondale, or I guess Lee Scott, and he will call the game against Cottondale on Friday, and then Opelika on Saturday. So a lot of Lee Scott baseball there. Just to inform you on Auburn High baseball, what we've got coming up, I have a game tomorrow on the road at Russell County, then on Friday against Park Road or against Pike Road. And so some good high school baseball coverage for you on our family or radio stations. And again, Auburn baseball tonight. They are taking on South Alabama down in Montgomery. Dabo's Park used to be known as Riverwalk Stadium. They sold the naming rights to it. Shocker how they did that. And wonder if anybody else is doing that as of late. No, that's where Auburn will take on South Alabama tonight. And, man, we've told you about those pesky in-state midweek matchups, right? Taking on the likes of UAB, South Alabama, Jacksonville State, Samford, right? You can never overlook them because they will give you everything they've got. More than likely, they will pitch their ace. They will pitch their guy because these are the games that they build their resumes with, right? This is what a South Alabama who beat Alabama, by the way, this is what they're trying to jack up their RPI numbers with. This is how they're trying to make the NCAA tournament. This is how they're trying to get a favorable draw in the tournament as well to go somewhere and try to pull off an upset. So this should be a fun one tonight. If you're not able to make the trip, I understand they've made it difficult for you to watch it. Shocker, I know. But we don't make it difficult for you to listen to it. I can promise you that. It's very simple. Wings 94.3. That's the place you need to go. That's how you can listen to it. On the radio dial, or you can download the Radio Alabama app. You can listen to it there. They are going to have you ready to go. Andy Burch and Brad Law will be on the call tonight. Again, Auburn and South Alabama, Wings 94.3. Getting confirmation on first pitch time. I believe it's 6, but I just want to make sure. It is 6 o'clock down in Montgomery, so broadcast time is 5:45. Coming up on tomorrow's show, it will be another busy one. We plan on having Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 to recap a very quick NCAA tournament appearance for the Georgia Bulldogs. Also get caught up on spring practice, what's going on in Athens. NFL draft coming around as well, so we'll talk to him about that. Double D Wednesday, Daryl Dappertz will be with us too to talk Auburn baseball. We'll be able to recap the South Alabama game, preview the Alabama series this weekend. How fun is that going to be? Plus another week of Auburn football spring practice. Pro day happening this afternoon over at the football facility, so have some updates on that. And we'll get to preview Auburn in the NIT. Woo! Yeah, baby. Auburn in Nevada tomorrow. Yes! I'm sure Daryl is so excited. No, we'll talk about all that and a whole lot more. And then Thursday, the Sweet 16 is back. Just like that. So the worst couple of days of the year. I've seen people running with this on social media that this is the worst Monday and Tuesday of the year because you just get so accustomed to 14 hours of college basketball, and then you're just kind of left there like Ricky Bobby, like you don't know what to do with your hands. Well, don't worry, we're almost there. The Sweet 16 is back on Thursday, and we'll be talking about that tomorrow and into Thursday as well. But again, Lee Scott Academy Baseball, Tiger Country 104.5 at 4:30. Auburn University Baseball against South Alabama on Wings 94.3. Check out the podcast version of the show if you missed our two great coaches interviews and Lindsey Crosby from hour number one as well. We're back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he was Christian Griffin. He still is. He's just not here. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.